Now, last but certainly not least, we have our final speaker of the day, the lady who is going to be closing the meeting, the keynote speech. Now, when I introduce this lady, I usually talk about her stunning competence, about her work rate, and about how much passion and energy she brings to this movement. However, to talk about that in the usual way would be playing down her achievements, because recently she became a mother. She now has a beautiful daughter of her own to look after. And despite looking after her daughter, despite being a full-time mum, Laura has not given up any of her PA duties. Laura has not stopped fighting for our people. Despite being a new mum, Laura has given just as much to this organisation, to our movement, to this cause, as she ever did before. I've always praised Laura as the most remarkable and most competent person I have met in this cause. But I think even I have underestimated her. For to do everything that she did before, and to do it just as well and just as competently, with a baby on her knee, she truly is a remarkable woman. Please welcome Laura Towler.
Just going to pour a quick drink before I begin. Thank you so much for that warm reception. So it's always an honour to speak in front of this crowd, and I feel incredibly grateful for being given the final slot once again. And when I was considering what to speak about today, I thought, because I'm closing the conference, I want to finish on something really big. So I've decided to try and tackle a really huge topic, and I hope that I can do it justice, and I hope that I can do it justice in 25 minutes. So today I've chosen to speak about how the current system in the United Kingdom is broken, and how as political dissidents in opposition to that system, we must be radical in order to secure victory. So a few years ago, a number of YouTubers, content creators and nationalist figureheads met up in an Airbnb in York, and we discussed what we were going to do to take our movement off the internet and into the real world. We wanted to create a true opposition to the system, something that would be bold enough to tell the whole truth and be honest about the issues that our nation faces. We wanted a way for our people to organise and fight back. There were plenty of people in that room that day, many of whom you would probably recognise, and plenty of ideas were passed around, but only one person put forward a plan of action that he then began to implement in the real world, a true man of action. That man was, of course, Mark Collett, and that plan was what we know today as Patriotic Alternative. Many of us got behind Mark's plan, and in just over 2 years, Patriotic Alternative has grown into a real-world movement that over 16,000 people have registered with. We're active from the tips of Scotland to the south coast, and every single month, our number of supporters and the output of activism and community work that we give back increases. We anticipated when we started this the venom and the hatred that we would receive from the system, but we completely underestimated the amount of love and support that we would get from the British public. We didn't expect to grow this fast. It has been unbelievable. If our movement was struggling to advance, if our activists were unlikable caricatures of scary right-wing bogeymen, and if our ideas were unappealing, then the system would just let us continue, or they'd give us a platform to embarrass ourselves. But the system comes down harder on Patriotic Alternative than anybody else I can think of. To the point where in February of last year, the Tory government published a report that said that we weren't breaking any laws, so they wanted to change the law in order to stop us. Our enemies will tell you that this is because we're a threat. We're also irrelevant, apparently, but they'll tell you that we're a threat. They'll say that we're dangerous. And we are in a way, but not in the way that they say we are. We're not about to commit any acts of violence, like they want nationalists to do. But we're dangerous because we're ruthless, uncompromising, and unapologetic in our beliefs, and they know that these opinions are popular with the British public. It was never going to be easy going up against the most powerful forces in the world, but this struggle is a remarkable opportunity for us to pave the way for our vision of a strong, prosperous, and proud Great Britain. What lies ahead will be a true test of our vitality. And whether or not we succeed will depend on the strength and the fortitude of the people in this room. So, introduction over, I now come to the main body of my speech. And as discussed at the start, I'd like to talk about how the system is set up in order to leave us powerless. I'd like to talk about how towing the line and jumping through the establishment's hoops is not going to get us anywhere, and how what we really need is a revolutionary and modern movement. One quick point that I have to make before we begin is that although I'm going to be talking about a lot of the groups that attack us, I do not want to paint a picture of doom and gloom. I genuinely think that we're going to win this. The important thing to remember is that the system behaves in such a way towards us because the system sees us as a threat. They lash out at us because they fear us. We make the system panic, and that's a good thing. So let's begin. During the 1930s, British nationalists, in opposition to the system of government back then, spoke of a parliamentary system that was a century out of date. Many changes had taken place in Britain following the Industrial Revolution and the Empire, changes of manufacturing and energy and movement, and the subsequent growth of international finance and the subsequent power of the people that control that had rendered the system at the time out of date. Fast forward another century to today, and very little of that parliamentary system has changed. Britain's culture has once again changed rapidly, especially in relation to things like population growth and travel and technology. Obviously, the internet is a big one. But in many ways, we're still dealing with that parliamentary system that is now two centuries out of date. A parliamentary instrument of another time is made obsolete today and is therefore easily exploitable by the money power. Today, the people of Britain hang on to this vague notion of democracy, and it's often coupled with words like liberty and freedom, but we don't have anything of the sort. We're instead given an illusion of choice, with no outcome ever resulting in the will of the people being carried out. Of course, an obvious example of this is immigration, and despite the British public always being against mass immigration ever since Empire Windrush docked in 1948, we've never been listened to and our will has never been obeyed. Instead, politicians will campaign on anti-immigration platforms in the lead up to an election because they know that this is what the public want. And then once they're elected, they'll ignore everything that they promised and go back on all of their pledges. In addition, many people vote in our two-party system for the least worst of the two big parties. For example, I'm going to vote for the Tories because I don't want Labour to win. And those of our people who do take a chance on a smaller party are stopped by our first-past-the-post electoral system. I don't need to remind the room of the 2015 general election when UKIP received 3.8 million votes. They received 12.6% of the total vote, and they actually became the third most popular party in the United Kingdom, but they only secured one seat in the House of Commons. I'm sure you're all familiar with the phrase talking shop at Westminster. One of my favourite lines from one of my favourite books reads, "In the light of history, it will ever be regarded as a curious and temporary aberration of the human mind that great nations should elect the government to do a job and should then elect an opposition to stop them from doing it." I can't think of a greater example of this than Brexit, when in June 2016, 17.4 million people voted for Britain to leave the European Union. They were met with years of debate and delay and compromise. Every change or innovation that we try to pass through Parliament is met with endless drafts and committees and line-by-line debates. 650 opinions have to be considered every time, and that's only in the House of Commons. Even those politicians who do have good interests of which there are very few, even they struggle to get things through, even when they work as a team. None of this is any use to the British public, who don't get what they want. They don't get what they voted for, and they don't get what they were promised. Voting essentially becomes meaningless, and the British public know this. How many times have you heard somebody say, they're all the same, or they don't care about what I want anyway? Once upon a time, a politician was an admirable man, and somebody that we could aspire to. Compare the likes of British Army Brigadier and classic scholar Enoch Powell, a man of remarkable intelligence, a poet who wrote many books and spoke many languages, to Diane Abbott, who can't do basic maths, or David Lammy, a man who scored 29% on Celebrity Mastermind when he was in charge of higher education in our country, a man who thinks that Henry VII came after Henry VIII. These people are not the best of the best, and I would hazard a very confident guess that everybody in this room could do a better job than they do. But these people are not chosen for their intellect or innovation. They're chosen as they contribute towards the continuation of the current system and the continuation of the chosen narratives by that system. This is ultimately not a strong, self-sufficient nation state governed by a proud and mighty people, but a multiracial, easy to control, disenfranchised population with a sole aim of generating further power and capital for the money power. The same people who control all of the major parties, those who have everything to gain from the continuation of the current system, also control the press. Tedious battles in the House of Commons about inconsequential matters are aligned with the newspaper headlines to match, and both of these distract us from the things that really matter, such as the demographic replacement of our people. Such issues will never even be considered in Parliament, never mind the chance that those trends might be reversed. And thus, it is those of us who battle against that system, those of us who are attacked by this system, who are the true revolutionaries, and so we should be. The Liberal left's only complaint is that we're not moving fast enough down this path of multicultural degenerate misery, while we, on the other hand, want to metaphorically burn this whole damn system to the ground. The Liberal left in reality are so unappealing in their current form that their sole function today involves maintaining the continuation of the current system. And their chosen narratives, whether that be in relation to immigration or LGBT issues or COVID-19 restrictions and vaccinations or the ongoing attacks on our freedom of speech, are exactly what the system is saying. The Liberal left will support the banks as they shut down the accounts of dissidents. They'll support the police as they arrest us and raid our homes for giving our opinions. And they'll also support the Tory government, who they're supposed to hate, when they publish incorrect reports highlighting a fake far-right terror threat. The Liberal left are supposed to be all about the worker, all about the little man. However, in recent months, we've seen workers' protests across the Western world in relation to vaccine mandates and COVID-19 measures, and the Liberal left have spent this time calling those people racist. Once committed to standing up for the underdog, they now stand for nothing apart from opposition to us. Even their name is anti-us, albeit they don't understand the terminology. The Reds may have begun this conflict by confronting our activists head-on, by approaching us when they outnumbered us, but we now outnumber them so greatly that bashing the fash now involves nothing more than behaving like a bunch of hysterical crybabies who telephone hotels and hiding in bushes taking photographs of us like some creepy weirdos. And who can forget Hope Not Hate at the last, their massive blunder at the last Patriotic Alternative Conference, when they got caught lying about our event being shut down? They said that they were here and that people were being turned away as soon as they arrived. You were all furious with Matt Collett, apparently. And then, of course, the photographs and the speeches went up later, and they were left looking very red-faced indeed. Never let them forget that they got caught lying that day. The hatred that these people have for their own people is truly sickening. The Liberal left are not a modern movement. The Liberal left are just another wing of the system. We are a modern movement. When it comes to discussion and debate, they have nothing but lies and misrepresentation. And while they call us racist, anti-Semitic, Nazis and bigots, it's worth noting that they never call us liars. I don't highlight the ease that the liberal left manoeuvre through the system in order to paint us as victims, because we are not victims, we are winners. I highlight the ease in which they manoeuvre through everyday life to highlight how unappealing they are. Only the weak want to position themselves on the easy path. Only the cowardly will cling on to the last remnants of the system's waning power. Only the gutless will discard their own morals to survive under a system that saps their integrity and their honour. The true greats will always choose the heroic struggle. You will not be remembered for taking the easy path. I touched on the press briefly earlier, but I'd like to say a little bit more about them now, because coupled with the liberal left and anti-white organisations like Hope Not Hate, they too use the most dirty underhand tactics in order to misrepresent us. We must ask ourselves, why do they never tell the truth? Why do they only write about us when they can say something bad? The British press are obsessed with Patriotic Alternative. Well, we've just released our roadmap, which details our plans for the next 10 years, and you think that they might want to say something about that, but they haven't, and that's because they can't use it to paint us in a bad light. The British press know that they have to lie and misrepresent us because they're the ones doing it. They're the ones cherry-picking flimsy stories and ignoring most of what we do. When Dominic Kennedy at the Times published a number of articles about us last year, he wrote some things about me. And rather than taking a photograph of me from the internet, of which there are plenty, he went to one of my streams where I was talking about something very serious and I was looking very stern. And he took a screenshot of that and used that as the photograph of me in the newspaper. Because he can't have nationalists looking pleasant and friendly. Any article that features Mark will use old quotes of things that he said 20 years ago. And I'm not saying that I disagree with anything that Mark said, but Mark has said a lot over the last 20 years. There are so many other quotes that they can use, but they use these ones because they know that they make him look bad, or at least a little bit brutal, and they don't want the public agreeing with anything that he says. In fact, the majority of articles about Patriotic Alternative aren't actually about Patriotic Alternative. They're just quotes from people that don't like us. An article about Pierre will be one sentence of something that we've done, or sometimes something that we haven't even done, such as, I don't know if anyone saw that backwards swastika graffiti on the cenotaph in Barrow. They've affiliated that to us. And then the rest of the article will just be quotes from organisations that hate us and boring politicians. The press work as an arm of the system in order to incorrectly paint nationalists as either evil, violent thugs or low IQ idiots. They are malicious, and if they had their way, they would destroy the reputations of our people and risk our safety. Is this a fair system? Surely the public should be presented with the facts and then be able to make up their own mind. They shouldn't be bombarded with propaganda and misconceptions about imaginary far-right monsters. I'm going to say something here, and it might be controversial. I might get my first boo. But freedom of speech should not include freedom of the press to lie about, attack and destroy the lives of good people. Phew. Everything that I've discussed today, this system that leaves us powerless, the set of enemies that we face, the way that we are treated like children, how what we're allowed to say is governed and micromanaged. Is this freedom? Is this liberty? What likelihood is there today of the majority of our people achieving a way of life that came second nature to our ancestors? A home to call our own, a large family, freedom of expression, an unmolested private life, and enough free time to enjoy a selection of hobbies. We are told that all of this, that democracy, is the perfect governing option. We're told that this system is the only way of preserving our liberties and freedom, the liberties and freedom of our people. But we don't have freedom. We boast of having freedom while being slaves. We assert that we have liberty, but surely nobody believes that the British people are free today. Politicians are supposed to be servants to us, but politicians are servants to the money power. At the start of my speech, I said that this system is broken, but the system isn't broken at all. It's designed to be like this. The system is designed to have the ability to shut down any opposition it may face. It's designed to generate further power and capital for those in charge, and it's designed to leave us ineffective. So I reach my conclusion. So I've tried to paint a picture above of how the current system is set up in order to leave us powerless. And because of this, it is vital that we don't just play the game that's been dictated to us. We need to be radical and revolutionary, and we need to make our own rules. Our objective is not to achieve parliamentary power and then to carry out political placeholding. Victory for us is achieving a national reconstruction where the British once again become a proud and mighty people. The time for elections has not yet come. I'm not saying that elections are pointless and that we should ignore them. They're part of our roadmap and they're a great opportunity for us to make ourselves known and to help move the Overton window. But what I'm saying is, it's pointless for us to play a hand in a game that's set up for us to lose. And it's pointless for us to believe that that will fix everything. First, it's necessary for us to build a modern movement of the British expression that invades every phase of life and for us to reach power in areas which are way beyond parliamentary control. We cannot muddle along year by year securing a smaller and smaller percentage of our population until the day comes that we've lost and we look back and realise that we were played. We will play all right, but we will control the game. We will compose the rules. We will rewrite the greatest pages of British history in a way that we see fit. The hour of crisis may be upon us, but it is during crisis that the British are at our best. The moment that we get the British public on our side is the moment that we have won, because the British are the most mighty and uncompromising force that the world has ever seen. Our biggest enemy isn't the enemy that stands in front of us, but the unwillingness of our people to defend themselves. But Britain has already begun to awake. We will not be insulted and pushed around for any longer. There will be no fence-sitting, compromise, or neutral stances. Through national revolution, our talented race will surpass all of our past achievements. We built everything that is great in this country, and through discipline, organisation, self-sacrifice and loyalty, we shall do it again. We will channel the anger and the sadness that we feel at the injustices suffered by our people, the audacity that we should be expected to give up our homeland, into a stubborn and intense force that will win not by passing ideas around on the internet, but through decisive action in the streets. We will help our people where the system has let them down. We will spark a racial awakening in our people who will once again learn to love themselves. We will place our hope and confidence in the youth of Britain, who, coupled with the experience and knowledge of some of our more experienced members, will ensure that Patriotic Alternative isn't a short-lived fad, but a movement for the ages. We will win not by clinging to nostalgia, but by creating a modern movement that will take us into a glorious future. Every insult against our people will be remembered. The honour of the British people shall be restored. We will show our people a true alternative and make this land our own once more. Thank you.